Can we slay the dragon?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. How scared should we be of the inflation monster, and when do we start fighting it? We get another clue this morning when the government releases its latest producer price index, followed by tomorrow's consumer price index. Joel Rose has the story of a policy walk on a tricky tightrope.
Economists agree we're still in a recession, but with the federal government borrowing and spending billions of dollars, some say it's not too early to worry about inflation.
I am concerned about the rise in oil prices, the rise in commodity prices in general.
Jeremy Siegel teaches finance at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School.
I think actually in the second half of this year that the Fed may have to start raising interest rates to move against inflation.
But there, Siegel seems to be in the minority. Nick Perna is chief economist at Perna Associates. He says bankers at the Federal Reserve should wait to raise rates until the economy begins adding jobs, probably sometime next year.
The recession's very much with us. All we've got going on right now are indications that it might end by the end of this year. So against that backdrop, it just seems to me to be quite unlikely that we'd have any significant increase in inflation.
Perna says if policymakers move too aggressively to stop inflation, they could also put the brakes on the recovery. I'm Joel Rose for Marketplace.
The world's four biggest emerging economies, the so-called BRIC group, they're holding their first summit today. The leaders of Brazil, Russia, India, and China are meeting in the Russian city of Yekaterinburg. As Stephen Beard reports from our European desk, these leaders want a bigger say in global economic affairs.
The BRIC countries account for 15% of the global economy, a share that has doubled over the past decade. Goldman Sachs predicts that within 20 years, the BRIC group will be bigger than the G7. Chris Giles, economics editor of the Financial Times, says the four countries are united by one common ambition: to play a bigger part in global bodies like the World Bank and the IMF, which are currently dominated by the US.
They are big, they are large, and they're fast growing. And they want to have a bigger role and a bigger say over global events. The main purpose of the summit is really to challenge American dominance over the global economy.
China and Russia have both expressed interest in developing a global reserve currency to replace the US dollar. The Russian president says that issue will be on today's agenda. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Asian stocks continued the sell-off today, down about 2%. Yesterday, the Dow took its biggest one-day dive since late April, down 187 points to 8,612. The broader S&P 500 was down about the same amount, just over 2%. European stocks, though, have turned mostly higher this morning. The sale of Saab has taken another big step. General Motors said this morning it has signed a deal to sell its Saab unit to a group led by the Swedish luxury sports car maker Koenigsegg.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Monsanto, committed to sustainable agriculture, creating hybrid and biotech seeds designed to increase crop yields and conserve natural resources. Produce more, conservemore.com. And by Reuters, offering breaking news, exclusive stories, and insights that impact today's financial markets. More at newsfirst.reuters.com.
Last week, Congress heard testimony from Bank of America Chief Kenneth Lewis about his controversial purchase of Merrill Lynch late last year. Tonight, on public television stations, a new Frontline documentary adds to that story. The documentary is called Breaking the Bank, and it tells the tale of Bank of America from its rise in the southern city of Charlotte, North Carolina, all the way to its ill-fated takeover of Merrill Lynch. Producer Mike Kirk says since they accepted federal bailouts under the TARP program, the lives of Ken Lewis and other bankers will never be the same.
I think Lewis and the other bankers who still retain TARP money in their vaults have discovered a fundamental truth, and that is that it's hard to be working for a public corporation. You have to go up to Capitol Hill and get spanked around by the members of Barney Frank's committee. You get pulled over to the White House where the President of the United States warns you that he is the only person standing between you and the pitchforks. You have no foreclosure rules imposed on you. And all the other ways your business has now been invaded by the newest chairman of your board, a man who lives at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
One of the interesting players here is the bank that took over Bank of America. North Carolina National Bank was this regional outfit that ended up turning Charlotte, North Carolina into a world financial capital. How do you present that bank in that city?
Well, it's an amazing revisitation of the Civil War. Much to my surprise, Hugh McCall, who was Ken Lewis's predecessor, is very forthcoming with us. When McCall got the bank in the 80s and 90s, he was determined to bring capital back to the South and to piece by piece put together, you know, a huge bank in Charlotte that would rival and eventually win against Wall Street. When Ken Lewis got the job replacing McCall, he carried it on with a shopping list that included Countrywide, the mortgage lender, and lots of others. As one person in our film says, he was determined, as a born and bred Southern boy himself, to give the middle finger to Wall Street.
Mike, you've now spent so much time with this Bank of America story, producing this documentary. What have you personally taken away and found memorable about these events?
It's amazing to me the extent to which we were in a massive meltdown all throughout the fall and the winter. And everyone at the top in this, with Ken Lewis, Hank Paulson, eventually Timothy Geithner, and President Obama, are all even still kind of making it up as they go. It's so liquid. The question is so deep, and nobody can really kind of ask it out loud because the system is built on confidence, on public confidence, and no one wants to be the one who says the emperor has no clothes. But, of course, the fundamental emperor has no clothes question is, how solvent are the banks?
Mike Kirk produced the Frontline documentary Breaking the Bank. It premieres on public television stations tonight. Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
We're also telling the ongoing story of the financial snafu. We invite you to join us at our website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. Have a great Tuesday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.